Today is Wednesday, July 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Special Counsel Robert Mueller testified before the U.S. Congress today.
As you know, I made a few limited remarks about our report when we closed the Special Counsel's office in May of this year. There are certain points that bear emphasis.
Also, Iran warns of potential conflict if conditions change in the Strait of Hormuz and the effects of illegal gold trade in Africa. Those stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. A day of drama is unfolding in Washington with Special Counsel Robert Mueller testifying before Congress about Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election on behalf of Donald Trump and whether Trump subsequently obstructed justice as president by trying to thwart the prosecutor's investigation. Mueller revisited the conclusions of the report before taking questions.
First, our investigation found that the Russian government interfered in our election in sweeping and systematic fashion. Second, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired with the Russian government in its election interference activities. We did not address collusion, which is not a legal term. Rather, we focused on whether the evidence was sufficient to charge any member of the campaign with taking part in a criminal conspiracy, and it was not. Third, our investigation of efforts to obstruct the investigation and lie to investigators was of critical importance. Obstruction of justice strikes at the core of the government's effort to find the truth and to hold wrongdoers accountable. Finally, as described in Volume 2 of our report, we investigated a series of actions by the President towards the investigation. Based on Justice Department policy and principles of fairness, we decided we would not make a determination as to whether the President committed a crime. That was our decision then, and it remains our decision today.
Earlier, I spoke with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson about the first of his two appearances before House committees today. I began our conversation by asking her what the key takeaways were from Mueller's testimony before the House Judiciary Committee.
Well, Steve, I think that this highly anticipated day here on Capitol Hill, so far at least, is actually not moving the needle that much on impeachment, which we know that the 90-plus House Democrats who have called for that to start happening really wanted to see move the needle with Mueller today. I don't think that either side is really getting that gotcha question that will run in nightly newscasts that the American public will see that could really shift the opinion. But, you know, we're early in the process still.
Now, before the testimony was going to begin, Mueller made it very clear that he was going to stick to the confines of the report. Is that still the case?
Absolutely. He has answered numerous times with, look at the text. That is what we know of Mueller, that he wants to keep strictly to the text. He absolutely addressed at the start of his testimony that he was not going to be getting into some of the deeper issues that may have started all of this, the Steele dossier, the Fusion GPS findings. He says that that's outside his purview of his investigation, and he's had to say that numerous times to some of the Republican members of Congress here.
Speaking of Republicans and Democrats on the committee, what can you tell us about their tracks of questioning, both on the Republican side and on the Democratic side?
Well, I know that the House Democrats really wanted to nail down on this idea that the president is insane, that Mueller found no evidence of obstruction or collusion. They want to nail down that that's not actually what Mueller found. And they want to really look into the issue of whether the president can be charged after he leaves office. There was a lot of discussion today about how a sitting president can't be indicted. The question is, what happens after he leaves office?
We are speaking after Mueller has completed his testimony in the House Judiciary Committee. He is going to move on and testify before the House Intelligence Committee. For our listeners around the world, what is the difference between these two committees, and what can we expect the differences in the lines of questioning?
That's a great question, Steve. So the House Judiciary Committee, which is going this morning, is looking more at the legal issues of what a president can be indicted for, if he even can be indicted. What are the issues with collusion, with obstruction of justice? Basically, the legal issues. Then when we move into the House Intelligence Committee hearing, we're going to be hearing a lot more about Russian obstruction during the 2016 election and how much that, you know, changed the election, what their involvement with the Trump campaign was in 2016. We'll be kind of shifting gears to look more backwards at 2016 in the afternoon.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent, speaking to us on the phone from Capitol Hill. Thank you so much for your time.
You're so welcome.
A suicide bomber walked into the office of Mogadishu's mayor and detonated explosives strapped to his waist, killing several people and badly wounding the mayor, according to Somali police. Police Captain Mohammed Hussein said the mayor, Abdirahman Omar Osman, and his deputy were rushed to a hospital with critical wounds, and two district commissioners were among the dead. It was not clear how the bomber managed to enter the mayor's office during a security meeting. The Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab extremist group often targets government buildings, such as the presidential palace and other high-profile targets in Mogadishu, with bombings. Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello is expected to step down Wednesday after almost 2 weeks of protests against his administration that were sparked by the publication of offensive chat messages with aides, several of whom have already quit. Rossello made no announcement by midday, but major local media report that his resignation is imminent. Protesters had cheered those reports late on Tuesday, but warned that his departure would not end the demonstrations, now entering their 12th day. Reuters correspondent Nick Brown spoke with protesters.
There have never been protests like this, at least not as sustained for as long as these protests. Social media has been a big driver here. The word has gotten out in a way that it's never gotten out in the past. A lot of these protests are being led by younger people, with older generations following suit.
If he does step down, his replacement as the Caribbean island's leader would likely be Justice Secretary Wanda Vasquez, whom protesters reject because of her ties to Rossello. The governor's chief of staff resigned on Tuesday as prosecutors investigated the scandal. Meanwhile, a judge has issued search warrants for the phones of Rossello and 11 other of his political allies. Now, these protests have left local business owners suffering the consequences as cruise ships cancel stops to the capital of San Juan, losing potential sales to the estimated tune of more than $3 million. Reuters' Jason Albano has that part of the story.
In the midst of the protests, tear gas, and chaos in Puerto Rico, this cruise ship has decided to dock on the island's shores. But it was largely alone on that decision Tuesday, with five other cruises opting to skip their stops at San Juan altogether. According to tourism officials, losing that business might cost the island over $3 million in sales. It's a big blow to the bankrupt island that's still struggling to recover from deadly hurricanes in 2017. Locals here say they're doing what they can to keep their business afloat, but mostly all they can do is wait.
One of my businesses is a boutique hotel, and there have been many cancellations. People are not coming to visit, but are waiting to see what happens. Local visitors have also stopped coming.
The protests, which began more than 10 days ago, saw hundreds of thousands of people take to the streets. They're calling for the resignation of Governor Ricardo Rossello, who's at the heart of a major corruption scandal involving a leaked chat. He and his aides used profane language to describe female politicians as well as openly gay Puerto Ricans.
Before today's political proposals, the governor had promised us to help with tourism, but all he's done is go against us.
That was Reuters reporter Jason Albano. Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV on Wednesday quoted the military advisor to Iran's supreme leader as saying that any change in the status of the Strait of Hormuz, which Tehran says it protects, would open the door to a dangerous confrontation. The channel also quoted Hossein Degan, a commander of Iran's elite Revolutionary Guards, as saying Tehran would not negotiate with U.S. administration under any circumstances, and that if Washington decided to go to war, then all American bases in the region would be targeted. As Boris Johnson becomes Britain's next prime minister, EU lawmakers say a Brexit deal renegotiation is not in the cards. The AP's Charles Deledesma reports.
The European Parliament is warning Boris Johnson not to count on any renegotiation of the Brexit deal that his predecessor, Theresa May, negotiated with the EU. The bloc's Brexit steering group says the statements made by Johnson during his campaign to lead the Conservative Party have greatly increased the risk of a disorderly exit of Britain from the bloc. It adds that a no-deal exit would be economically very damaging, even if such damage would not be inflicted equally on both parties. Johnson has said that he would take Britain out of the EU on the Brexit departure date of October 31, come what may. Charles de Ledesma, London.
Here are some other major stories from around the globe. Zimbabwe's government workers say they are being squeezed by inflation. Some have even asked to live in their places of work to cut down on the cost of rent and transportation. Kyodo News reports that Tokyo Electric Power plans to scrap its Fukushima Daini nuclear station, located just a few kilometers south of the bigger Fukushima Daiichi plant, where three reactors melted down in 2011. The UN's nuclear watchdog has announced it will meet Thursday to start the hunt for a new director general to replace Yukiya Amano, who died last week. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and with our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say there have been five major extinction events in Earth's history. The most devastating, killing 9 of 10 species on our planet, was the Permian mass extinction, or Great Dying, 252 million years ago. A new study by U.S. and Chinese researchers supports a theory that volcanic eruptions were responsible for wiping out most of life on Earth. The eruptions blasted significant amounts of material, especially greenhouse gases, into the atmosphere for thousands of years, causing Earth's average temperature to rise about 10 degrees centigrade. The researchers point to the warming climate as a major culprit behind the catastrophe. But also devastating was the acid rain produced by the volcanic material in the atmosphere and warmer water temperatures, which ruined the oceans and other bodies of water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. A Reuters investigation examines how surging demand for black market gold ore is quietly poisoning large swaths of Africa, a practice that also extends into Asia and South America. Reuters reporter Matthew Laratonda reports.
This man is named Yaw Ngoha, and he didn't survive. Yaw died just weeks after this interview was filmed. For months, Reuters has been learning about unregulated and often illegal gold mining, a practice that happens across Africa, Asia, and South America, learning how it's smuggled out to global markets, and examining its terrible effects on health and the environment. Yaw was a wildcat gold miner in Ghana. His body had wasted away so badly, he'd only allow us to film one side of his face. Look closely at this photo of Yaw. He had a big new house, a big flat-screen TV inside, a big couch, a brand spanking new smartphone. All of this is rare in Ghana's wilderness, but the secret to his success is also what killed him. Yaw suffered from lung failure. Mercury, nitric acid, fumes from explosives, and other hazardous chemicals are all part of the process used in unsanctioned mines like these to turn this raw ore into this pure gold. But many don't know the hazards. Others ignore it because there's no better way to make money here. Up to $300 a week in Ghana. At a cocoa plantation, the pay is about $5 a week. $5.
yɛde sɛ yɛnu mu ne yɛfifi mu a sɛ bɛyɛ a maako ne nyinaa bɛfiri mu.
Nana Boateng is a village elder who, as a younger man, once mined himself. Now, he doubles as a mortician for Dr. Frederick Sarpon, who has traveled Ghana for years trying to warn villages like Boateng's to stop. Success, though, is limited. This isn't a niche problem. It's estimated there's 1 million miners in Ghana alone, but an additional 4.5 million livelihoods depend on that cash flow. But because of the chemical use seeping its way into the land, the waterways, the food, more than 10 million people in Africa are exposed to mercury. It lops 2 years from each person's healthy life expectancy, it causes birth defects, and in higher exposures, like yaw, it simply poisons. It's estimated that unregulated mines were to blame for some 280 tons of mercury dumped into African waterways in 2015. In South America, it's even higher.
The main river is over there. Yes, I've been passing around this place for the past 20 years. And this river used to be very clear. But because of mining activities upstream, Galamse, we find it brownish now. It's no more clear. And I'm sure we don't even have aqua life in it. Fish and other things cannot be had from this stream. It's also poison as well. And you know, a lot of people depend upon it. But when I look down and see the color, I become very sad.
Sarpong believes it's not too late to reverse these effects, and he thinks the government's recent ban on all small-scale mining has had an impact. But so many are still in operation regardless of the government's wishes. And as Reuters has previously revealed in this series, the amount of illegal gold coming out of Africa is actually increasing.
And that was Reuters reporter Matthew Laratonda. UN Special Envoy for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, says he believes Yemen's warring parties, despite their difficulties, want to find a political solution to end the four-year-old war. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Special Envoy for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, remains optimistic that peace in Yemen is possible despite setbacks and mediation efforts. He acknowledges that steps for winding down the conflict accepted under December's Stockholm Agreement in Sweden have not been implemented. Nevertheless, he says both the government and Houthi rebels continue to insist they want a political solution. He says they remain committed to the Stockholm Agreement.
They see it as the gateway to opening up negotiations on a political solution. So it's, I think, quite remarkable and unexpected in some ways that this time that has elapsed since December the 13th, that we are still observing commitment from both sides to make what they agreed in Stockholm happen.
While that is encouraging, Griffith says a political solution to end this catastrophic war must be found soon. He says the war is becoming more complex and fragmented, and the appalling humanitarian situation in Yemen continues to worsen.
There are many wars in Yemen, and the longer this goes on, not only is it the longer that people will die from hunger and conflict, but that the solution becomes more difficult. The fragmentation of Yemen is an alarming trend.
The UN says nearly 18,000 civilians have been killed or injured since the Saudi-led coalition began airstrikes in support of the Yemeni government in March 2015. It says more than 22 million people need humanitarian assistance or protection, and more than 8 million are at risk of starvation. Griffiths warns the longer war goes on, the greater the possibility that Yemen could be dragged into a regional conflict. He says the likely consequences of that are too awful to contemplate. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. VOAnews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Russia's embassy in Seoul Wednesday denied that Moscow had formally apologized over an alleged airspace violation the previous day, after South Korea said that Russia had expressed deep regret while blaming an equipment malfunction. VOA's Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo has more.
South Korea and Japan both scrambled fighter jets after they say a Russian military aircraft entered airspace near a group of islets claimed by both South Korea and Japan on Tuesday during a long-range joint air patrol by Russian and Chinese aircraft. South Korean warplanes fired flares and hundreds of warning shots near the Russian aircraft, and the incident triggered a round of diplomatic protests by countries in the region. Yoon Doo-hwan, a press secretary at South Korea's presidential office, said an unidentified Russian military attaché in Seoul told South Korean officials that the military plane appeared to have entered an unplanned area due to a device malfunction. Russia's public statements on the issue have not mentioned any technical problems, nor has Russia announced any investigation or acknowledged a violation of South Korean airspace. China's defense ministry said on Wednesday that China and Russia did not enter the territorial airspace of any other country during their joint patrols on Tuesday. South Korea and Japan scrambled fighter jets because both claim sovereignty over the disputed islets, called Dokdo in Korea and Takashima in Japan. The two U.S. allies are mired in a deepening political and trade dispute, which fanned concerns that it might undercut three-way security cooperation to fend off North Korea's nuclear threats. Japan's top government spokesman said on Wednesday the country's relationship with South Korea was in a very severe state, and that Tokyo would continue to urge Seoul to take appropriate action over a string of issues that have frayed ties. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The man who found the Titanic will now try and find Amelia Earhart's airplane. AP correspondent Rita Foley has that story.
Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan were trying to fly around the world in 1937 when they disappeared. Now, deep sea explorer Robert Ballard and a National Geographic expedition will try to find their plane. They'll be searching an area in the central Pacific Ocean that's about halfway between Hawaii and Fiji, according to National Geographic. 7 years ago, Robert Ballard talked about how challenging it would be to try to find out what happened to Amelia Earhart.
If you ever want a case of finding a needle in a haystack, this is at the top of the list.
I'm Rita Foley.
And taking a quick look back in time, it was on this date in 1969, the Apollo 11 astronauts Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins, who were at the moon and set down and circled it, splashed down safely in the Pacific Ocean. And then in 1975, the Apollo spacecraft also splashed down the Pacific, completing its mission, which included the first ever docking with a Soyuz capsule from the Soviet Union. And with that, that'll do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, engineer Andreas Regis, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson. Thank you so much for joining us. Now for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow the Voice of America on social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And with our VOA mobile app, you can take the stories with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a wonderful Wednesday.